All right, before we start the actual program, I want to spend less than 60 seconds telling you about Haystack. Haystack is the place where you're going to find the right web designer for your next project. And I've been telling you about all the different things that I love about Haystack, including the fact that you can see big pictures of past work from each design firm that you're looking at. But I want to show you what happens after you find one that you like. Let's suppose that you like this company, Fresh Tilled Soil. You can see what they charge, their typical budget. You can read a little bit about them. You can see big pictures of their past work, really clear what they do and what they're like. But let me show you on the bottom. Here's what I want you to see. Not just a link to their website, but their actual email address. Haystack is not standing between you and the design firm that you hire. They are just letting you connect directly. You can email them, you can have a conversation with the firm, and you could decide whether you want to work with them or not. And if you don't want to work with them, well, tons of other companies on Haystack that will help you, that will design your next project for you. Here's the program. Hey everybody, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and I've got with me one of the revolutionaries. He's smiling because he doesn't believe it the way that I do. I was going on a rant here earlier about how you're a revolutionary in mobile location-based technologies. And let me introduce him first of all, since I keep talking about him. Dennis Crowley is the founder of Foursquare. This is his second company that's in this space. Dennis, can you tell people what Foursquare is?
Yeah, sure. So we're building things for mobile phones that make cities and really just like dense areas in more interesting and easier to explore. So part of it's a friend finder, so it'll let you know who your friends are. Part of it's trying to build a smarter city guide. So we can recommend places that are nearby and filter out the places that you've been to and the places that you haven't been to. And then we mix a whole bunch of game mechanics in there too to serve as some kind of like incentive or motivation to do things that you normally wouldn't do. And now we're based out of New York. There's five of us on the team right now. And we're available, I think, in just about 50 cities now.
By the way, before we continue, do you have any programs running in the background that might suck the processing power out of your computer? iTunes, Word.
I have some. I'll close some of them down. Hold up a second.
All right, let's do it.
A lot of it is I'm on the shared internet here, and it can be a little bit rough.
Okay. So far, we've been doing okay. I just want to make sure that we continue to look as good. All right.
Okay, yeah.
So you've wanted to do this for a long time. Did the original idea come to you back when you were at NYU?
The dodgeball stuff?
Yeah. I mean, where did the idea come from for to do mobile? Where did the passion come from to do this?
Yeah, the dodgeball stuff has been around, those ideas have been around since, 2000 or so. A lot of them stem from, my very first job in New York was at the startup company, which, we all got laid off around the same time. And these are the only friends, it was like my core group of friends in New York. And we weren't working together. We weren't, if we weren't at work together, we weren't hanging out after work together. And so when we didn't have jobs anymore, there was no more socializing. So, what we built is just like a very basic way to be like, well, I'm laid off, you're laid off. Let's meet in Central Park. I'm at the park, or I'm at the bar, or I'm over here. And it was just, it was like putting out a bat signal so people could come and find you. And, this was way before things like Friendster were around, even very early social networks. And it was very difficult to explain to people. It was mobile, it was social, you needed a friends list, which no one was doing at the time. So it didn't really gain any traction. It didn't pick up traction until around 2003, 2004, when I was at ITP, this grad program at NYU. With my buddy Alex, and we were able to reinvent some of the dodgeball stuff in the context of hey, it's like Friendster but for cell phones. And once we started doing that, and we were able to reach a wider audience.
I see. So the first site or the first product that you built, was it a public product or was it just for you guys?
No, well, it was a public product. There was nobody using it.
I see.
The very very first version of dodgeball was. It was a city guide, kind of like citysearch.com. And the only thing it allowed you to do that was different, you could add your own places and you could write your own reviews, which at that time was like a big idea. It was like before a lot of the user-generated content. And then, later we just tweaked it a little bit so that you could, we had this list of places in New York and you could check into those places and say, oh, I'm here or I've been here. And when people started doing that in real time, that's what a lot of our work at NYU was about, was seeing, hey, if we can convince 1,000 people to tell us where they are on a Friday night, does that make Friday more interesting or does it make it more awkward or like how does that whole thing work out? And that was a lot of what Alex and I were trying to do with our thesis there. And then that's, you know, all the features that were built into Dodgeball initially were just, you know, from what we were finding as we were letting our, you know, 50 or 100 friends in New York play around. It's like, you know, it's like, well, sometimes people check in early, sometimes people check in late, sometimes people check in a lot, sometimes people get in a cab and meet you anywhere you are. Like, there's all these weird things about privacy and you know, the dynamics of different social connections, like who you want to connect with and who you don't want to, and whose feelings do you not deny their friend with. Like, all these things we just worked through with Dodgeball.
I see. And was that first product called Dodgeball too?
Yeah, well, it was a domain name that me and some buddies from college, we bought back in 1998. And we used to use it just as like our personal blog, like to post stories of ourselves. And then, you know, I started working on this City Guide stuff in like 2000. And, you know, I just let those guys, and I was like, well, I'm gonna use a name for this other product, and we'll all get our own other domain names by then. So
I see.
And then, you know, Dodgeball has been like, it's been like 4 or 5 different projects, just all under the same name, because it was the only domain name I had.
Did you have to buy them out of that ownership of the domain name?
No, I think I'm still friends with those guys, my buddy Josh and my buddy Brian. I think I was paying the hosting the whole time. And so I was like, listen, I paid the hosting. You can either give me, you know, $500 for 3 years of back hosting, or we'll just call it even.
I see. Wow, so, great deal. One of the deals
in
the
I mean, this was the domain name back then.
So your original goal was to create a city guide, kind of like City Search, Yelp, Yellow Bot, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and it was only when you said, how do we get people to add locations, and you realized, well, by having them check in,
well,
that's the way to do it?
The purpose of creating the city guide was because City Search couldn't keep up with how quickly New York was growing at the time. So we were, you know, we were hanging out in these neighborhoods every month or so. And you know, City Search couldn't keep up with like the names and the addresses. And it's like, well, we'll build something that can keep up with these neighborhoods, and then people will be able to write their own reviews. And you can, you know, it's so basic because every site offers this, but it was to us as like a big thing at the time.
Okay, and you mentioned something earlier that I want to come. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, you said earlier about the ITP graduate program at NYU, huh? Right? What was that program like before we get into what you were doing with it?
Yeah, so ITP is it's a tough program to explain, but it's a graduate program. It's 2 years. It's based out of NYU's art school, the Tisch School of the Arts. They take about 100 kids per year. It's a 2-year program, so there's 200 people there. And it's a mix of kind of like it's art school, but with like a big basis of technology. So you've got people that are there, and they're creating hardware, and some people are creating digital installations. There's people that make musical instruments. There's people that make little robots. There's people that, you know, design social software. There's a little bit of everything. It's a really crazy place. It's in this loft in the middle of Manhattan. And the program was started, you know, I think it was like in the late 70s, and it's been good, you know, it first was started for TV, and then it's, you know, it was exploring interactive film and interactive television, and then a lot of telephone and stuff, and started picking up CD-ROMs, the internet, and it just kind of keeps morphing over time. You know, even in the couple of years since I've been involved, it was big on websites, and then mobile, and then, you know, voice over IP stuff, and now there's a lot of, you know, there's some gaming stuff that's going on, there's a lot of social media. It changes every year. It's a fantastic program.
I remember that whole part of NYU being for the artists, the people who would walk in with green hair and piercings everywhere, and it was the eclectic group, and I went to Stern, which was the kids who wanted to be business people so badly that they'd walk into school with a briefcase.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's still like that in a lot of ways, you know. What's interesting now is there is a lot of overlap between Stern and, there's not a lot, but there's enough overlap between Stern, the business school, and what goes on at ITP, where you've got people with amazing ideas at ITP that don't really, you know, they're not thinking about turning it into a business, but at least they're starting to get connected with those folks. Where it's like, oh no, you can manufacture this product, or you can create this clothing line, or you can raise money for this startup. And so those types of things are happening more and more often now.
All right. By the way, this is the first live interview that I've done from Buenos Aires. Guys, if you're watching us live, I'd love feedback on how it's coming through for you. How's the audio? How's the video coming in? Any input that you can while you're watching us live would be helpful. Okay. So then you're in this program. What did you want to study there? How does this business, dodgeball, integrate into a program at school? You're the first person to even tell me that school has helped entrepreneurship for you. Did I lose you just as I was asking how bad the technology was?
Yeah, it sounded really strange. I want to try that one more time.
Okay, sure. I was saying, what'd you do with dodgeball at ITP? How did it help you think it through?
Oh yeah, so it was a 2-year program, and the first couple of weeks I was there, I met up with Alex Rainier, our dodgeball co-founder. And it's an art school, and I think we felt we weren't really artists, and we were trying to figure out how we fit into ITP. And then he was coming from Razorfish, and I was coming from a startup, and we just started doing our own little brand of like little product development stuff at ITP. And so we started making things like we did some experiments with creating social jukeboxes that knew about the people that were in a room. We did stuff about presence detection, so you could tell which of your friends were like at they call it on the floor, but were at the program at the time, and you could leave notes for them. And we built in a little gossip tool, little fun experiments. And then it was in our second year, around the same time that Google started coming out with a lot of their mapping products, like when Google Maps came out. In the very early days of Flickr, and right when Facebook, right when Facebook was starting and Friendster was starting to really pick up some momentum, and the same thing with MySpace, it's like, man, we could probably reinvent the dodgeball stuff and have a little bit more success, just because like everyone knows what this stuff is now. We just started working together, and we eventually turned it into our thesis project. We worked on it for, we graduated in what, in 2004? We graduated in May 2004, and we said, let's give ourselves like 6 months to work on this, because maybe it might turn into something. And then in that time, we ended up meeting with the people at Google and decided to bring the project over there.
Okay, did the ITP program give you any help in thinking it through? It sounds like you guys were developing it yourselves. What kind of input did they give you? What kind of support?
Well, it was the real early days of social software back then, and we were taking, I think that was the first time, Clay Shirky. Clay Shirky was teaching a class just called Social Software, I think. And he knows this stuff better than anyone else. He was basically teaching a room of 20 kids that were just building stuff over and over and over again, like everything that he knows about social media. The way that the NYU was structured at the time, like that particular class was designed where you were building things specifically for your classmates. And so people were building, in our class, someone that built a tool for making group orders of like Thai food or Chinese food or something. So like if one person was eating, everyone could eat. Our project was the one where you could leave notes for people and kind of gossip about people on the floor based on little avatars, kind of like Cyworld type of thing, but before that stuff was out. What else was there? There was like a shopping tool that someone put together, like, hey, if someone's buying a couple, microprocessors of the need for their project, we should get a whole bunch of other people on top of it to get a group discount. But just little experiments in social, not even social media, but just, the harnessing the power of groups to do interesting things online. And, Alex and I would sit around on the whiteboard and draw things out all day, and then we'd run them by Clay and Anthony Townsend, and there's a bunch of other professors there that were really helpful in solidifying a lot of the ways we were thinking about things. So, all the dodgeball stuff was built at ITP. I spent 2 years sitting in this building. All my free time was there, just in the lab, kind of plugging away and drawing stuff on the wall. And it's a really amazing place. I was just there the other day. We had one of our investors, Ron Conway, was in town, and MC Hammer was with us. And so I brought them over to NYU. I'm like, listen, I know you guys are tight for time, but you have to, you got to come over and just check out what NYU looks like, what the ITP program looks like, because it would blow your mind. And I think they're like, all right, we'll go take a look. you know, once you do bring people up on the floor and have them look at, like, there's all these student projects, there's a whole bunch of students all over the place, there's like, you know, half, there's like a broken computer on one side and like a half-built robot and some weird art installation. And it's just, it's incredibly inspiring. And those two guys were really, really wild by it too.
So you're hanging out with MC Hammer, Ron Conway, one of the, maybe the most famous angel investor ever, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Incredible. You must be, actually, well, how do you feel about that? How does it, do you get excited all the time? Do you feel like, well, I'm in some dream of mine from years ago, or do you
well,
take...
I think we're really psyched to be working on, you know, something that people are really passionate about, you know, and I think the lesson learned from a lot of the dodgeball stuff was that we were, you know, it's very fun building things that your friends like to use. And then, you know, so you go out on a Thursday or a Friday and you hang out for drinks with people and they tell you everything that's great about what you're doing and then everything that sucks about what you're doing. And then you spend the weekend fixing it all. And then it's like, okay, next week, what do you think? Is it better or worse? And, you know, we had that with Dodgeball, and then, you know, we lost it at some point, you know, because it didn't work out at Google, and the project eventually got shut down, and, you know, it's tough not being able to, I spent 2 years without having, like, a project to tinker with, and now, like, we have that back with Foursquare, and we've got a lot more users, they're a lot more passionate, the phones are much smarter, cities, and we have all these ideas for things that we want to do, and, it's really nice to be able to do them again. So like I think we're really going to be blowing people's minds with the new stuff that we're rolling out.
I want to get to that. I want to blow people's minds a little bit whatever you're willing to tell me. But I want to go back and play psychologist for just one question here and ask you go ahead. Oh, sorry.
I thought I lost you.
I want to play psychologist for one question here and ask you, what's the motivation here? Is it money? Is it to leave a legacy? Is it that you're just such a tinkerer that you can't stop? Is it that you have this vision for what mobile could be and you can't stop until you get to that? What is it?
Well, we've been building this stuff in New York for a while. Like it's 2009. I feel like I've been doing this like 8 years, you know, 9 years. And you see, like, when you build little things, it brings people, like, they're good at bringing people together. Like, our group of friends used to be, you know, five people sitting around a bar on a Friday night. And I think a lot because of, you know, a lot of people use Dodgeball and other social media tools that, like, it's now like 100 people that are all just kind of like loose friends with one another. And it's a huge, like, supportive network. And over time, you just see how this stuff changes relationships with people and changes your relationship with the city. And, like, that's a powerful thing. If you build something that you use every single day and your friends use every single day and you have the ability to change their experiences, like, you're introducing them
but
to
why?
The
why? Why is that? Why is that something that you want? Is that something that you want because you've always wanted
to be... It just makes everything more interesting.
Sorry?
It just makes everything more interesting. Like, you're building software that changes the way that people experience, you know, their Friday nights. Like, that's a fun space to be building stuff.
All right, I'm gonna continue then with the story, and then we're gonna come back to blowing people's minds. We're gonna leave that out as a hook. I want to continue with the story to get the biography of Dodgeball. You build this in. You build this within ITP. You now graduate. What happens to Dodgeball after graduation?
Well, so Alex and I were going to get other jobs. I was going to go back and work at MTV, and he was going to go back and work at I think at RGA. You know, RGA is a design shop in the city, and you know MTV. And, you know, the day that we graduated, there was a story in the New York Times about Dodgeball. And then, you know, it was just gaining momentum. And we had this moment where it's like, man, if we play our cards right, we can probably turn this into our jobs. And this will be what we end up doing. And so we gave ourselves 6 months. And, like, I, you know, basically just borrowing money from my parents to help pay rent. And I did a little bit of freelance work on the side. And Alex was doing the same. And we went out and we pitched a whole bunch of different investors. And we'd had a really hard time raising money. Like, venture capital firms wanted to write $5 million checks, and we were looking for, you know, $100,000. We didn't really know anyone. We were just two kids coming out of grad school. It was very difficult to get connected with angels in New York. I mean, this is back in 2004.
Sorry, we lost the connection. You were saying this is back in 2004. So
yeah, it was back in 2004. It was hard to get angels. It was just a different climate. I was just, you know, I was giving talks at, like, academic conferences, and you know, O'Reilly conferences and be like, hey, we're working on this thing called Dodgeball. I think it's really important. And yeah, we caught the eye of the Google guys. And while we were looking for money, they're like, well, we don't really invest in companies, but we'll just acquire you guys and come work for us and continue to build the things that you want to build. And so, I mean, that was a fantastic deal for us. And we get to do what we want to do. We get a job out of it, and we get, like, you know, there's a little bit of a payday in it, too.
Well, why didn't you go for the $5 million investment if that's what was available, if that's what VCs were looking to make?
Oh, they weren't going to give it to us. Like, they wanted to write checks for that much, but, like, we're rolling in, like, T-shirts and jeans. Like,
people who are rolling in T-shirts and jeans too. Is it that you just didn't have the connections, that you weren't plugged into the community of angels and advisors and investors?
I think it's like we weren't plugged in, you know, as much. Like, we didn't have any reputation for doing anything. You know, we had never run companies. We had both been laid off from other companies. We came from this really weird program at NYU that no one knew about. And, you know, who's going to trust us with that check? So, I mean, I don't blame them. It wasn't like they were handing it to us and we're like, no. Like, we would go in there and like, yeah, we write big checks and you guys aren't ready for big checks. So, you know, since Google thing was like a good opportunity to continue to work on Dodgeball, but kind of do it on someone else's dime.
You know Ron Conway now. Had you known him back then, do you believe that he would have invested?
I don't know. I think there's a lot to say for being it was a completely different environment. This is before Delicious was sold and before Flickr was sold. And, you know, everyone, I think, was still feeling a little burnt from what happened in, like, 2000 and 2001. And tech was not the place to be, you know, squirreling away your money at the time. I think we were still telling a good story, but, like, there was nothing that was successful on mobile. There was really nothing that was successful on, you know, really social. And we were all just getting started. So I think everything's so much different now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, now we're all walking around with smartphones, and they're just getting smarter and smarter. It's not just text-based anymore.
Yeah. People see the value of the service now. You know, people are like, oh, it's like there's, you know, millions of people whose lives are better or more interesting because of things like Twitter. And, you know, there's an ecosystem for all of these apps. Like, Facebook is doing amazing things, and Twitter's doing amazing things. And there's a big opportunity for, you know, for other amazing things to exist in that space. And, you know, I hope we get to be one of those things.
Okay, so the rumor was that the company was sold for about $40 million. Is that true?
No, it's not.
Sorry,
not
the connection went bad. What did you guys sell for?
The number is not disclosed. That's an incredibly high estimate. It was not close to that.
That's what I figured based on this story and what I've been hearing. Can you give us a sense of what it was sold for? Did they get it for steel for a few hundred thousand? Did they get it for? What'd they get it for?
No,
roughly?
I mean, we don't disclose the numbers. You know, it's just part of the arrangement that we have with those guys. But, you know, it was enough that we didn't have to work for a couple of years, and we got to continue working on the stuff that we're passionate about.
Just enough not to work for a couple of years, not forever.
Yeah, we're not rolling around in yachts and helicopters, you know.
Okay, before we get into what happened afterwards, can you give me a sense of the evolution of the product? What did it become just before the sale? What did it look like?
Of Dodgeball? What did
it
look like?
Yes, Dodgeball, just before the sale.
It was some crappy, like, PHP code. But I think, you know, I think what Google liked about us is that we understood the space really well. We were really excited about social media. You know, we had done a bunch of experiments with people in New York, and we knew what we were doing, and all we needed was more resources to make things happen. And so, you know, our hope was that we'd go and get, like, a couple engineers, and, like, maybe they would promote us a little bit, and we'd have, a couple hundred thousand people using it. And, you know, you could really see some interesting things happening. But
how would people would check in, right, to let Dodgeball know where they were? Was it that you were?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They would check in by texting into you guys, right?
Yep.
And you had a clever solution for not having to pay AT&T and Verizon for those text messages. Can you tell people what that was?
Yeah, it was just it wasn't even clever. It was just out of necessity we found this thing where, you know, you could basically send an email to someone's phone number, and it would arrive on the phone and look like a text message. And, you know, you could, you could do the same thing on the way out. Like, instead of typing a number, you could type an email address in your text message field, and they would come to us. And it didn't work on all phones. You know, it worked for like 85% of users, but it was enough to get the point across that, like, hey, we're doing this thing where if you tell us where you are, we'll do interesting things for you. Like, we'll tell you about things going on nearby and introduce you to people. And, you know, we try to push that text messaging interface as aggressively as we could to do these interesting things.
Were you identifying people's locations based on cell towers?
You couldn't do any of that stuff back then.
Nothing. Like, it was just based on self-reported information.
Yeah, you would say, hi, I'm at Ace Bar. And we would go into the database and be like, okay, do we have an Ace Bar? Yes, an Ace Bar is this lat mall. And if you spelled it wrong, we didn't know where you were, you know? And if you made up a place, we didn't know where you were. So, I mean, it was really primitive, but like it worked. It worked surprisingly well for, you know, how simple it was.
Okay, and so the company that loves innovation, the company that loves developers, the company that's going to invent the future buys you guys out and says, we have the money, we have the resources to help you guys see this through. What did you imagine the product would look like with their help?
Oh, we wanted to get it on more phones. Like, you know, I didn't have a smartphone at the time, but we knew that there was phones coming out with GPS built in. You know, some of the BlackBerries were starting to be location aware. And, you know, we just wanted to build more advanced versions of some of the stuff we were thinking about. And so, yeah, we worked with a variety of teams there, and we had consulted with their mobile team, and we worked with the Orchid guys for a little bit. And, you know, it was difficult to get certain things done. So,
how do you mean? Well, I've heard you say this before, and I'm trying to imagine what it must be like. You're in an office. You've got computers.
We were in the New York office, and you know, they were based out of San Francisco. We were just like, you know, two kids from NYU. And I think it was weird that, you know, I think some of, like, the infrastructure that we needed to get up and running, like, you know, like someone kind of watching over us and making sure we had some engineers and we were talking to the right people, like, I don't think some of that stuff existed. And, like, maybe we should have moved out to San Francisco for a year, but, you know, we didn't do that. So I think it was a perfect storm of things that just went wrong with the deal, you know, where... We were doing our own stuff, and we just had a hard time getting integrated with other things. So,
why did you and Dennis not go to San Francisco?
Why Alex and I not?
Well, we just, sorry, you know, Dennis is... right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been living here for years. My family's on the East Coast. You know, Alex was engaged at the time. Like, his family's out here, too. You know, his wife's family's out here, too. It's just, you know, we're born and raised in the East Coast, and no one was super excited to move out west.
Right. Then at some point you decided to quit, but you didn't do it quietly. I saw that Flickr photo where you didn't give them the finger at Google, but you gave them the thumbs down in a picture.
It was a thumbs down, yeah.
Right. That's a pretty gutsy move. Aren't you worried about your future? Aren't you worried about them buying your next company, about any of that?
No, I mean, we were just frustrated at the time. Like, there was a lot of things we wanted to do, and we just weren't able to get them done.
Like, what? Would you requisition something, and they would ignore you? Were you asking for some kind of support, and they said no? Did they take their time even responding? Was it like getting an app approved at Apple?
No, I think it was just... I just think there was... You know, it's kind of easy to get lost in a big company. You know, like, I used to work at MTV, and it was the same type of thing. You know, like, you'd have really good ideas, and sometimes they wouldn't make it to the places that they need to. And I think, you know, we ran into the same type of stuff. It's just, you know, it's a big company growing, and, you know, we're two guys that are pretty excited about things, and we don't have the, you know, we don't have the proper channels to make the noise that we wanted to make.
Okay, so... You left the company. The company abandoned pretty much abandoned your project.
They launched Latitude. They launched another product, and so I think they didn't want two competing products, which I can agree with.
What was the project?
Oh, there's a product called Google Latitude. It's out now. Yeah, and so I mean, I can see them not wanting to have two, you know, mobile social services. It's confusing, and so yeah, Dodgeball got turned off, I think, in like February. Of this year. And we heard about it in January, and that's when me and my co-founder, Naveen, that's when we started getting serious about, okay, well, if they're going to turn it off, we should build something that'll replace it.
I see. Why did you get together with Naveen instead of with Alex?
Oh, Alex took a gig at a company called Schematic, and he's a superstar there. He's like heading up their user experience team. Like, he's really enjoying it. I went to another startup called Area Code that some of my friends were running. And you know, I was there. You know, we were in this building. We were sharing office space with a couple other companies. And one of those companies was a company called Socialite that Naveen was working for. And you know, Naveen and I were both passionate about like building things that make, you know, cities easier to use. You know, I like the Friend Finder stuff. He really likes the City Guide stuff. And you know, we were tinkering kind of back and forth. And then just, you know, just kind of happened that we started working on projects together. And then, you know, it's like, you know, we had this little prototype for some of the Foursquare stuff. And these in January, it's like, we should just, you know, we should build this stuff for real. We should try to make a product out of it.
Okay. That was January of 2009, not too long ago.
Of 2009, yeah. Yep.
All right. And you guys built the first version yourselves?
Yeah. We built it. I mean, it was the two of us for, I don't know, for the first like 5 months or so. So yeah, like, he was working on the iPhone side, and I was working on the back end side and the website side, and just hustling to get it done.
All right. Before I start asking you questions about that, let me just thank a few people who are watching us live, including Heat and Shaw. Oh. Do you know Heat and Shaw, by the way?
Wait, who?
Heat and Shaw.
Kiss Metrics. If I do, hi.
We got to introduce you if you don't. Heat, and let me know if you don't. Okay. I want to thank Heat and Shaw for telling people to watch us. Gabe Rodino, URL Girl, Jennifer 23, Heat and Shaw one more time. Bookblade, thank you. Alex, Alexander King, thank you guys all for telling your friends to come watch us. This is the first time that I'm doing an interview from Buenos Aires, and I could use all the support that I can get from you guys. All right. So you guys decide you're going to start this company January 2009. I see you online, and I've got a sense of you here from this interview as a visionary. You've got a big idea of what mobile can be about, what location-based businesses can be, but you're starting a business with no outside funding, with just you and a partner.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reduce this big vision, and what do you reduce it to? How do you find that core?
I think it was kind of, you cut out a little bit, but I think I know what you're asking. It was kind of easy because we wanted to, first and foremost, like reproduce the functionality of Dodgeball. Like, the thought was if you had turned Dodgeball off in New York and San Francisco and, you know, a couple of the other cities were really popular, and there'd be, you know, a good number of users that were inconvenienced by it. Where it's like, you know, we still all use it, well, we were all using it in New York to coordinate. It's like you don't make plans, everyone just checks in. And we've been doing it for years, and like if it goes away, it's like shit. Now what do we do? You know, it's like, you know, it's like that one day that you go out and you forget your cell phone, and you're like, how am I supposed to make plans now? You know, and that's how it would have been if you know, if the Dodgeball just if it went away. And so, you know, we just wanted to relaunch a check-in functionality on an iPhone. We started doing things a little bit smarter. We knew it was going to take a while to get people migrated over, so we started building in some game mechanics that would make it fun if you didn't have a lot of friends. And it turned out that the game mechanics were really sticky and people really enjoyed, you know, trying to get points and trying to get badges. And so we started refining some of that and giving some more thought to how can we make this kind of like a fun one-player experience. And then, you know, as we started doing that stuff, we were realizing that, oh, the data that we're collecting about where people have been is really interesting in terms of being able to make recommendations. Hey, Dean, you need this space? Got it? Okay. Sorry. Conference room.
Good. I'm glad he doesn't. So, the game mechanics, you said that you refine them. What do they look like at first? The game mechanics, by the way, are, for anyone who hasn't tried it, is you get to win badges based on how often you go to a location and what you do on the service. You get to be mayor if you've been at a location. I think, is it the person who's been there the most number of times?
Yeah,
mayor?
Yeah.
Right? What did it look like at first?
Well, actually, they don't look too different than what they do now. And they really need to be kind of redesigned a little bit. It was basically you get a couple points for checking in. And, you know, if we were able to detect patterns in your social behavior, we would give you badges. And, you know, we were experimenting with what some of the badges would look like. Like, do you get them for going to like restaurants or bars? And then we eventually started, like, building them so you would get them for like staying out late and getting, you know, going to karaoke places or eating out of food trucks or going to really nice restaurants, or, you know, it just, you can identify patterns in people's behaviors and reward them for it. But I think there's a lot more that we can do with that. Like right now we're rewriting a lot of our infrastructure and kind of redesigning a lot of the product just on the technical side so that we can, we have a lot more flexibility in terms of changing the rules and building the features.
What kind of things are you going to be changing?
And for in terms of the mechanics,
mm-hmm.
the game mechanics, well, we have a problem with, you know, we have a problem with like with cheaters in a sense. It's not a lot of users, but it's enough users that can be a little bit of a nuisance. And it's people that check in at, you know, restaurants and coffee shops while they're watching, you know, TV on their couch. And they'll do it to like steal back a mayorship or try to earn a badge. And they're like, you know, it's like, why would you cheat? It's like a social game. But yeah, it's, you know, we can do some things to correct that. That's one of the things that we're working on. And once we do that, we'll kind of even the points out a little bit. Like, I really like, I like the leaderboard, but like, admittedly, I don't, you know, I don't pay as close attention to it today as I used to. And I think we can, you know, as a designer and kind of developer of the system, like we should make it so like we are following those points very closely, that I care about the number of points my friends have. You know, maybe the points go towards something. So I think there's a good opportunity to do a lot of that stuff.
What do you mean? That the more points you get, the more free lunches you might get somewhere, or the more...
Yeah, they could translate into something like frequent flyer miles or like Coke reward points, or, you know, we talked to some people about maybe the points get donated to charities. You know, maybe who knows? Like, they could be used for a lot of different things. But this, the ability, you know, the idea, excuse me, that you're earning some kind of currency for doing things in the real world is a really, I think, like a powerful idea. And I think there'll be a lot of people experimenting with that. And yeah, we're pretty psyched to be at the front of it.
All right. Another thing that you said earlier is that you wanted to create a good one person, one player experience, you called it. And that's one of the problems that I've got with competing products. I'll log in. I won't have anyone on there who I know. I won't care about the program then, and I'll just dump it.
Yeah.
Is that what separated you guys from the others?
I think so. That's what we knew that that's what was broken with Dodgeball. It's like, if you don't have 50 friends in Dodgeball, it's boring. And so what we try to do is like, okay, let's build something that works if you have 50 friends, but let's build something that works if you have zero friends. You still want people to check in and have fun using the product. And in general, I just think what we're doing is, you know, the stuff we're building is more fun than the stuff that other people are building.
What about, well, actually, so far, everything that we've said about this seems to be an instant hit. Have you had any flops? Mm-hmm. I know it's been a short amount of time that you've been running this company, but have you had any flops with Foursquare?
Initially when it launched, like we launched it South by Southwest, and we had a lot of, you know, we had a huge number of users sign up, and then it just tanked. Like, the usage fell off, and no one was really that interested. And, you know, the product was lousy. We didn't have a BlackBerry version. It kept crashing. And then eventually, as we started, like, we thought it was just over with. We started fixing it and adding some of these mechanics and integrating it to Twitter and, you know, revising the badges, like, slowly chipping away at things that were broken. And the usage started coming back. And, you know, now
integrating
it's
with
like
Twitter,
this...
that integrating with Twitter, that helped. Changing the design of the badges, you mean?
No, making it easier to get, cleaning up some bugs. I mean, it was pretty sloppy when we launched this thing in March. We should never have launched it. But we needed to. We wanted to do something cool for South by Southwest. And, like, you know, Naveen and I went down there kind of 50-50. Like, people are either going to really like this, or they're going to laugh at it and be like, this is a stupid idea. Like, go get a real job. And, you know, we went down, like, I don't know if it's going to happen. And it turned out that it was a big hit. And it was like, all right, well, let's continue working on it. Let's see what we can make out of it.
Yeah, it does seem like it was a big hit. I didn't play it at South by Southwest, but I felt, oh, no, that's where I first installed it, actually. I take it back.
Yeah, yeah.
A buddy of mine had it on. He said, install it. I said, all right. There weren't that many apps that were location-based. I had to try it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll have to figure out some way to one-up ourselves this year at South by Southwest. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
South by Southwest seems to have been, at least in the blogs that I read to do research for this conversation, seems to have been the defining moment where Twitter separated. It seems like going into South by Southwest, there might have been a little bit of a competition, at least in the blogs, that they were saying, will Dodgeball beat Twitter? Will Twitter stand out? And then it turns out that obviously that's where Twitter really made its name. Is that why you feel that that South by Southwest is so important now for Foursquare?
Oh, it's, you know, South by Southwest is just like where all the tech influencers come to hang out and be social for, you know, 4 days. And so it's less about like, you know, we have to have this winning app. It goes back to that, the question you asked me earlier. It's like, you know, you build things that you think your friends are going to enjoy. And we thought we could build something that would make South by Southwest easier because you know where people are. And it would make it more fun because, like, this, you're collecting these badges and stuff. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to win the parties. Like, that's fun. You know, like, we're looking forward to it this year because, like, yeah, there's a lot of people that really enjoy Foursquare. And, like, it was pretty broken last year. And this year, like, it works pretty good. And by March, it will work a lot better. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to, like, okay, this is the thing we wanted to build. Like, here's our second chance at it. Like, let's really make something awesome.
What about revenue? I remember the first time that I saw a coupon come up on my Foursquare screen. I was walking down 3rd Street Promenade, checking into a place that I just walked out of, and then an ad popped up for Fatburger. It was awesome. They said, go to Fatburger and you'll get some kind of special promotion.
This is just, I wish it was our idea. You know, there's a cafe or a coffee shop in San Francisco called the Marsh Cafe. And right around the time that we were getting really excited about users bragging that they were being the mayor of, you know, whatever place or whatnot and earning points and badges, these venues went out and they were like making flyers and hanging these flyers up, and it was like, hey, show us who the mayor and you'll get, you know, you'll get a free coffee, you'll get like a free ticket. And, you know, the Marsh Cafe was the first one to do it. And then we had a bar in New York, and then another bar in New York called Destination picked up on it. And before we knew it, we had like 20 places that were offering these specials. And it's like, well, let's build it in the app. Let's make it so like you see these things when you go out. And maybe it will be a reason to go to like coffee shop A instead of coffee shop B. And that's kind of what it's turning into. And so we've got this whole plan. We're working with this guy, Tristan Walker, who's a friend of ours, who's out in San Francisco. He's our San Francisco office, like our business development guy. And he's cutting deals left and right. He's cutting them with like bowling alleys and hotels and, you know, Fatburger, and, you know, it's like big chains. It's exciting.
How are you charging them? Are you charging them on a per customer basis?
No, we're not charging now. It's almost like, you know, brands are using Twitter and they just do it for free. We're doing the same thing. Like, it adds value to the users. The users want to use Foursquare more because, like, hey, I got this special, you know, I got the special promo and Fatburger's in it. It's like, hey, people are coming and, you know, checking in and stuff. Like, I'm sure we'll figure out a way to do it eventually. It just, we haven't done it yet. It's not,
so it's not yet revenue.
It's not in the immediate future.
It's not about revenue yet. How do you turn it into revenue in the future? What do you see?
You know, you might be able to charge, charge those places, you know, a couple bucks here and there for showing those coupons. And maybe the more targeted you want to get, you know, the more you end up paying, or maybe the more people that redeem it, the more you end up paying. So it could be something that's like similar to a CPM, a cost per check-in or a cost per visit or a cost per purchase or something like that. And I think you'll see as we start integrating with point of sale terminals, like if you go and buy like a Big Mac or something, maybe you scan the coupon off the phone, like who knows? You know, like all that stuff is doable and it gets a lot more trackable. So, it's just like, there's a lot of people that have tried like the digital couponing space, right? But they're usually like, you have an app that gives coupons, and that's not the way that people use that stuff. Instead, we have an app that helps you navigate cities, and then occasionally a coupon pops up. And a lot of times, not even a coupon, it's just like, hey, you're a good user, here's something for free. Or hey, you're here with five friends, like you get something interesting. And it's, you know, it's like, I think everyone's been at a bar where, you know, the bartender gives you a buyback because you've been there like 2 hours. Or maybe, you know, you're at a restaurant and you ordered like two nice bottles of wine and the owner comes over and shakes your hand. And, you know, that makes you feel good. And I think we're making more of those things happen, but we're just doing it with software.
And that, by the way, has been the dream of any mobile company since the beginning of mobile, that you can walk down the street and suddenly the right coupon will pop up that will draw you into a store.
Yeah.
Do you envision syndicating these ads out the way that AdSense works? Do you imagine that other people might be able to have them as part of their apps?
Yeah, I think so. We've got an API that people are starting to use right now. It's not public, but you know, there's a bunch of people using the private beta. You know, we're using it to build apps that are like Foursquare, that like when you check in somewhere, something happens. And, you know, every time that someone, you know, every time someone uses the Foursquare API to check in, we send down some coupon data. And you can display it if you want to. You don't have to display it. You know, like the way we think about it is like the promos that we do within the app should be so great that if you don't get them, you're disappointed. You know, you're like, oh, but I want to get the offer for the you know, the free chicken sandwich because I've been here 10 times, you know, and you feel kind of naked without it. So yeah, we're hustling to make sure we get the right types of venues or the right types of offers, and then we're letting other people play with some of those data, you know, some of the APIs, so that, you know, they can make their own apps.
By the way, if anyone is watching us live and you've got any questions, ask them now. We're coming close to the end of the interview. While you guys are typing in your questions, I'm going to ask the question that I wrote down here earlier. How do we blow people's minds? What's coming up?
Well, I think there's a good opportunity to do. I think city guide stuff has just been broken for a while, and you know, if you look at the way that Netflix recommends movies or Amazon recommends books, like we can do the same type of things, but for what, places and experiences and people. And we saw this with, like, you know, some mild success with Dodgeball, where if you nudge someone just enough, it's like, hey, you're at the same place as this person that your brother went to college with. Why don't you go meet them? Like, go introduce yourself. People will do it, and like, good things come out of that. And just, you know, a big part of what we're doing is discovery. Like, how do you help people find new things and have new experiences? And people feel excited when they do those things. Like, when you have an amazing night that was very serendipitous. And I think, you know, I think for a lot of the Dodgeball kids, you know, like all of our friends in New York, we've been living in this bubble, which has been amazing, for like 3 or 4 years, in which like technology just works and it brings people together. And now, like, we're finally getting people in all these different parts of the world experiencing that for the first time. Like, well, the stuff that we've been experiencing for 4 years, like, people are experiencing that for the first time. And you read about it all the time in people's tweets and in their blog posts. It's like, shit, this is what we've been waiting for. This is what we've been trying to push on people for a while. And it's finally taking off and it's finally sticking.
Yeah, the future is here. And you imagine, yeah, though, and what's coming up is more mind-blowing. You imagine that you're going to use, that I'm going to use it, that I'm going to use my mobile phone through you to discover new locations based on the ones that I've liked in the past and new people based on my current connections. That's what you want,
sure,
to do with Foursquare.
Yeah, yeah. I want Foursquare to, like, to buzz in your pocket when something cool is happening nearby. You know, and it's like, hey, you, like, look up and look across the bar because that's the person you need to meet. Or grab this person and you guys need to go across the street and have this thing that a friend of yours recommended. You know, to go try the tacos two doors down. When software is to do, and it does a good job at it, there's nothing more awesome than that. Like with Foursquare, even we saw this in the early days in South by Southwest, even when me and Naveen were unsure whether this would work, like we'd be at these places in Austin and we would check in and a tip would pop up, like before you've ordered your food, and it would be like, oh, you know, Justine says, order the ribs, get this beer, this is the side. And then the person's like, what do you want? And you're like, I'm going to take the ribs, the side, and this beer. And it's like, yeah, I did that because my friend recommended it, and it was like the best meal I could have. It's just, there's something awesome about that experience. And that was like the first day that we launched the app. And so the stuff that we're doing now is, it's just so much more sophisticated, and it's like, when it works really well. So, and... It's working really well in New York right now, and our goal is to make it work just as well in, like, all these other pockets.
Let me hear the visionary. Beyond Foursquare, what do you imagine is going to happen with mobile devices in the future?
Well, I think there's, you know, the only thing that they're really missing now, like, the iPhone's got all these sensors in it that we've never had before. So we've got GPS and altitude, and we've got a compass, and we've got, you know, an accelerometer, like anything, you can do anything you want with it. The only thing that's missing is like proximity detection. So I walk into my office and there's, you know, 50 people here, and my phone does not know who those 50 people are. That would be a nice thing to have. But, you know, I think we're a little bit a ways from that. I mean, there's some privacy restrictions with it. You can do stuff like Bluetooth, but no one uses Bluetooth. But I think that's a big piece that's missing. And I think that's going to, like, once that changes, that's a lot of interesting things going to happen.
I remember when the compass first came out for the iPhone, most people didn't understand, including me, we didn't understand exactly what we were going to do with the compass. It said, all right,
yeah,
great, I can find true north. But we didn't realize that you could get augmented reality and all the other,
yeah,
things that came on top of it. Once we have proximity detection, what do you think we can do beyond meeting people who we already know and maybe a couple of new friends?
I've always wanted to build the app where, you know, you can walk outside, you can stand outside a bar and your phone will tell you, like, is there anyone in here that I want to meet? You know, are there people that work at companies I want to meet, or is there someone I should meet because it's my brother's old roommate, or is there someone I want to avoid? like an ex-girlfriend or some guy that wants to punch me in the face. You know, it's nice to have, it's like the ability to see through walls or like see around corners. And you can kind of do that with data a little bit. And there's things, you know, there's things that we've been thinking about for a while that like we're just about to be able to build. That like no one's been able to build yet. And it's just, you know, it requires like one more release of the iPhone. I mean, there's a little bit of hardware in there that you can open up and make things happen.
All right, well, see, we're coming up at the top of the hour here. I promised that we'd go 45 minutes to an hour, and I think we've gone beyond that, including the setup.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. If you weren't doing this, what would you do? What other opportunities do you see out there?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. Like, people ask me all the time. You know, I think the reason we're doing this is because, like, there wasn't another product that we wanted to use, and there wasn't another company that we wanted to work for. So it's like, let's just make the stuff that we want to do. I'll tell you, one of the other spaces I'm really passionate about is you know, taking a lot of the social media stuff and making it happen on TV. So like while you're watching baseball games or football games, you get to participate with the conversations that your friends are having about the same game or the same show. I really like that stuff. I did some experiments with trying to make it happen, and you know, I was like, all right, I really like this space. But then once Google turned Dodgeball off, I was like, all right, listen, it's like our duty to rebuild this thing, you know, because there's nothing else that's going to take its place. I mean, like, we just need to do that, if only for like our, you know, 100 friends in New York. But, you know, not knowing it was going to take on a life of its own. So it's kind of like a best case scenario.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this interview. Hang on while I say goodbye to everyone. Everyone who's been watching us, thank you guys for watching. Give me any feedback that you can about this interview. I'm still getting set up here in Buenos Aires with my new system. I'm still learning a lot as an interviewer. So if you got any feedback on the way that I've been interviewing, let me know that. I always suggest that you connect with the people who I interviewed. Dennis, how can people connect with you? Can they add you on Foursquare?
Yeah. Find me
I'm sorry, can you say that again? We just lost you again.
Yeah, I think on the search bar, I'll pop up. Also, you can find me on Twitter. It's just at Dens, D-E-N-S.
All right, thank you. And I'll look for everyone's comments. Thanks for watching or listening. Bye.
Cool, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.